Welcome to the Zandbergen Report, where wealth strategies and investment wisdom collide, featuring your distinguished host and certified financial planner, Bart Zandbergen.
Welcome to the Zandbergen Report, showcase for wealth strategies and investment wisdom that's essential for our evolving world. I am your host, Bart Zandbergen. In the studio today, as usual, we have Paul. Paul, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. You have a long time returning. It's funny how there's a cycle. You know, those who were here in the early days find their way back eventually.
Yeah, and I'm glad that I was able to rope him in. He's a busy guy. Good friend of mine, entrepreneur extraordinaire Armand Sadehi. Armand, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Bart. It's really good to be here.
Yeah, of course, of course. I almost don't know where to start with you. There's so much shit you've done. I'm going to have you talk a lot about your background, but just to give people kind of a heads up, I know you're a published author, keynote speaker. I call you a serial entrepreneur. You're author of The Business Bible, CEO of six companies, a business coach, motivational speaker, and of course, you're a great dad and husband, workout fanatic like myself. So sometimes I don't even know how you do it. So let's give everyone kind of a heads up. I know that you got a real early start in your kind of your entrepreneur world. So let people know how you did that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for having me on the show. It's an honor to be here and spend time with you. And I think you know how I get it all done because I see you in the gym at like 4 o'clock in the morning.
That's right.
That's a part of it. So, you know, my background is kind of unique. I fell in love with business when I was a kid. 11, 12 years old, I started selling baseball cards and just loved the concept of creating a business. And so by the time I was about 15 or 16 years old, I decided to drop out of high school. And I went and started my own business. It was in the early 90s. So the tech boom was happening. And I happened to kind of be a tech geek. And so I did really well for myself for a few years. Moved out of my parents' house, got a nice apartment, drove a nice car, did all this stuff. And then at one point, decided that I still wanted that education. And so I gave it all up and went back to school. And did some different things, studied neurobiology, got my degree from Berkeley, and then attended Harvard Medical School. But the business thing inside of me was always burning, and so I needed to get back to business as quickly as I could, and I did. Yeah. And now it's been about 20 years that I've been back in business and applying everything that I know from the sciences really to businesses in all different sectors.
Yeah. So you run businesses, and I'd like you to tell a little bit about maybe at least a few of those businesses, and then I know you spend a considerable amount of time now coaching CEOs and business owners to be more effective and better entrepreneurs. So I want to make sure we talk about that.
Sure, absolutely. Well, my biggest company that I've had for the longest time is actually based out of Orange County, California. Our corporate office is here, and then we have several facilities across the country. It's a recycling company. We recycle electronics, and I've been doing that for about 12 or 13 years. And I say I've been doing it really for the last 3 years. I've almost completely exited the business. So while I still own most of the business, I'm not running it day to day. And I've started multiple other companies, and most of them have nothing to do with each other.
Yeah, they're very different.
So, I own a digital marketing company. I have something to do with data security. And then I have a web development and an app development business. We have a photography and videography studio in Orange County, and I've been in the restaurant business. I'm not in it now, but yeah, Having restaurant chains and all sorts of different things, and a business in the medical sector. But, for me, it's that love of business. And at one point, I you called me a serial entrepreneur. I am. But at one point, I realized that it even that wasn't enough to keep the juices going. So I realized that, gosh, what I really love is I love solving problems, and I love solving problems in the business world. And so I decided what I wanted to do is advise other CEOs, because there are some brilliant CEOs out there in all kinds of businesses, and some of them are having issues in their business that they can't overcome on their own, and they really have no one to go to. And I became that guy, and it's just turned out to be such a joy for me, because on any given day, I get to play with two or three or four different companies, I'm working with brilliant people who can actually follow through with the guidance I give them. And based on the fact that I've started so many of my own companies, over a dozen, I have a lot of knowledge that I can pass on.
So we talked about this the other day, and the companies that you work with, the companies that you own and still run, although so different, there's still a lot of similarities, right? You were talking to me about my business, and you know, presumably it was the first time you really heard in depth about this type of business. You came back with all these, you know, really good, solid ideas and strategies. And my assumption is, hey, it probably has works in other businesses as well. You're not as unique as you think you are. Is that a fair statement?
It's very true. Yeah, I mean, business is business, and what you find is that the issues that most CEOs are dealing with, whether they're a doctor who has a medical practice, or they're an attorney, or they're in the IT world, or they have a manufacturing company or an online business, they really are very much the same sorts of obstacles that you run into on a day-to-day basis. And a lot of it has to do with employees. And yeah. I work with people who have teams, right? That's where I really am able to make a huge difference is, you know, a company that has 10, 20, 30, 40, 100, 200 employees. It's really when my impact is felt the most. And when you look at those businesses, the basics are the same. 80-90% of it is the same once you get past the sort of what's on the surface. So what a doctor does to run a medical practice with, let's say, 10 doctors and nurses and all this stuff, and what an attorney does in a legal practice, and what an accounting practice, and a manufacturing plant, believe it or not, are not that different.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I gathered when we last met. What are some common challenges, including, you know, companies that have employees? That's probably one of the biggest challenges. But what are some of the biggest challenges you see that your CEOs are facing?
You know, it's interesting. I'd say the number one thing that I see, and I have clients ranging from companies that are small as $2 or $3 million a year companies to $100 million companies and higher, and a couple of public ones. And it's amazing to see how few CEOs actually take the time to understand their financials. I mean, it's the ultimate scorecard for your business. Yeah. You know, it's like asking LeBron James, what's the score in the game right now? You know, it's the fourth quarter with 5 minutes to go, and having him look at you and say, well, I've never really read the scoreboard before. Or is that the number of points or rebounds? Or is that it? Which side of the screen is our thing on? Or, you know, where's the 24-second clock violation? I thought it was 27 seconds, right? I mean, and I see people, I'm like, you're running a $20 million, $50 million, $100 million a year company. And to me, that's always a surprise. But then it's not, because at one point, my recycling company, I had 150 employees, and I didn't know how to really read my financials. Mm. Now, supposedly, I kind of did, right? But I wasn't able to look at my financials and get real guidance on what I should be doing in my business as a CEO. And that's what's important, right? It's being able to look at it and seeing it like a treasure map and saying, okay, if this is a treasure map, where do I need to go dig to find the treasure, right? And that's what your financials should be. And they should give you that vision. It's kind of like the rear view camera you might have on your car, right? When you put it into reverse, it shows you what's behind your car. And the point is, you need to trust that video. Now, if someone comes and says, oh, well, sorry, that video is from 8 minutes ago. Well, that doesn't work, right? So it's the equivalent of some of these companies I see. I'll talk to the CEO on the 20th of the month, and I say, so how'd you do last month? And they start telling me, and I'm like, no, I want the real numbers. And they're like, oh, well, the financials aren't done yet. I'm like, so your accounting people failed at doing the one thing that they're supposed to do, which is to give you accurate financials, in my world, by the 10th of the month, yeah, at the latest by the 15th. So I'd say that's the one thing that sort of surprises me the most.
Yeah, interesting. Other than on-the-job training, where else did you get your training? You went to school, you went to Harvard, and I mean, I think most of that was medical, though, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So other than your own on-the-job, any authors that you like, or mentors, or how'd you do that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a serial student as well as being a serial entrepreneur. So, you know, I read nonstop. I listen to audiobooks and podcasts nonstop. I call my car Mobile University, which I picked up many years ago from Jim Rohn. And so when I'm driving around, there's no music in my car. You know, I'm not goofing off. I'm listening to audiobooks. I love taking courses, so anytime I have a chance to take a seminar. So I'd say, you know, I've learned business from some of the best, greatest business minds. And the other thing that I do is I follow the stock market very closely. It's really the only kind of news I like to watch. So I'm not one for watching the different, you know, CNN, Fox, stuff like that. Instead, I'm focused on companies and how their stock performs and what they're doing as the stock does what it does, right? So these days I'm a huge fan of Tesla, and I'm watching Tesla very closely and seeing, you know, what is Elon Musk doing right and wrong, and how is that playing into the stock price? I think you can actually learn a lot of business lessons from that. And whether you run a bakery with 8 employees or Tesla, the rules, believe it or not, are the same. And so I watch a lot of that, and that's part of where I get my lessons. But most of it, honestly, has been from making a lot of really bad mistakes, you know, on my own, and failing multiple times, and learning along the way, and having my, you know, my businesses multiple times get to the point where, you know, I was 48 hours away from having chains put on my doors and having to close up the business, and somehow we pulled it out. And each time I learned a different lesson. And I think those are the lessons, honestly, that for me have been more valuable than all the classrooms that I've been into and all of that.
Yeah, it usually is. Can we elaborate on that? I don't have to hear every one of them. Can you pick a mistake that the listeners would get a great lesson from?
Yeah, you know, at one point, I think one of my big mistakes was I started to my recycling company was growing very quickly, and I was at about 20 employees, and we were just chugging along, and there was more money coming in than you could imagine, and opportunities everywhere, and I was working my butt off. You know, I had a great team of people, everything was just on track, and so, you know, everything we touched would turn into gold. So I wanted to hire, and I wanted to grow, right? And you hear the term grow gone, you know, and people sometimes think they know what that means, but I can tell you exactly what happens is, you know, at about 20 employees, the way it worked is it was me, and just about everyone in the company was either hired by me or highly influenced by me in their early days, right? And I had about 5 people who reported to me, and those 5 people managed the entire company. And then we were hiring very quickly, and in a period of about 6 to 8 months, we hired another like 15 people, right? And to someone who doesn't know, they would think, well, what's the big deal? The big deal is at some point around 25 to 30 employees in most companies, you hit a mark where you go from one layer of management to 2 layers of management, right? And suddenly, all the rules change. I mean, every rule that you've known as a business owner suddenly changes. And the things that used to work really well suddenly don't work very well. Because the thing is you used to be able to talk to someone who controlled someone else, right? It was one layer of management. Now, you have to train these managers who then have to manage these supervisors to then train their individual employees. Yeah. And it is one of the biggest leaps that businesses take. And I have to tell you that probably, 30% of the companies I've come into to do a turnaround where they're in big trouble. A lot of times people call me because they're doing so well, they just want to do better. But these days, a lot of times when I get that call and they're struggling, it's because they're right around that mark, somewhere between 20 to 40 employees, and that second layer of management has been injected in there. And they don't understand what's wrong. And what's wrong is, well, you're not interviewing every employee anymore. You're not actually guiding them on their first day of the work. And you're going through two layers of management. And so, you know, my company, but normally you don't catch on until you get to what? Like 50 employees. So for me, I blew past 20, 25, 30, got to 50, 60 employees. And suddenly the payroll was so high, we couldn't, we were barely making payroll. Everything was falling apart. I lost some of my best employees, the people who were the people I had brought in and trained. And it just, everything changed. And the problem is once you're at 50 or 60 employees, it's not like you can say, okay, time out, guys. Let's go back to 20 and let me do this correctly.
Yeah.
That's a big, big one. And you know, people who are listening, if we leave it there, they're gonna say, well, Armand, what's the answer?
Yeah.
And so the answer is that you have to take a step before, and it's not the number of employees, it's one tier of management to 2 tiers of management, is the big distinction. what you have to do is you have to stop and you have to create systems. You have to create structure. And you have to start running the business by the numbers as opposed to by the feel of it, right? So key performance indicators, having amazing key performance indicators for every department, having structured procedures, policies, systems, documents, you know, anything that, that keeps the structure in place, it has to be put in before you take that next step. And those who kind of blow that past that step, unfortunately, find themselves on the other side of it. And it's really hard at that point to try to manage the tornado you're in while you're building all these systems.
So I'm glad you said that, because I wrote down the word delegate. And I mean, we learned that in with growth, right? You should be able to have the ability to delegate. And so without those procedures and steps, you can delegate all you want, but it's not gonna be effective. I think, is that what you're saying?
Absolutely, yeah. And what people do is they sort of forget that delegation is, it's not about delegating and then forgetting about it, right? Delegation is an art that you have to master, and you have to know who can you delegate to in what way. So it's a whole nother topic that I talk about, and actually I do a seminar on it from time to time, delegation, because a lot of people make the mistake of either delegating and then not really delegating because they're micromanaging every piece, right? And then other people delegate and forget about it. And they almost seem to be a part of their personality, when in reality, when you're delegating, you should determine how to delegate based on the person you're delegating to and the task at hand, right? So if I want, you know, someone to go pick me up a sandwich, right, I can say, okay, I trust this person to pick up a sandwich, and you know, they kind of know my taste. So I say, hey, go get me a sandwich. That's enough, mm-hmm. right? But then if I'm going to have that same person do something that's highly complex, that's not typically part of what they do, what I want to do is I want to say, hey, here's the goal I want. You know, let's say it's still a sandwich. You know, go look up a few restaurants and come back to me with some ideas of where we might get sandwiches. And then they come back. And I say, yeah, you know, I kind of like this one. What do you think? And then you say, well, go back now. Go get their menu. Pick a couple of items on the menu that you think we would enjoy and bring it back, right? And then they come back. And then step by step, you go back and forth with them, and you play that little, you know, tennis match or whatever, until you get the results. And as they learn that particular type of task more, and as you learn to trust them more, you give them more leeway, as opposed to it being a part of your personality of, oh, well, I like to micromanage everything. Well, you shouldn't micromanage everything. Or, oh, well, you know, I just like to delegate to someone and move on to the next thing. Well, that doesn't always work either. And so delegation is definitely a huge part of it, but also it's delegating within structure so that there's structure in place. So if someone starts to veer off the path, there are walls in place, you know, that kind of bring them back.
Okay. Yeah. So I think it was a great example of a, you know, the mistake or a failure that you've recovered from, either in any of your own businesses and or in any of your people that you're coaching. What's a great a victory that you've seen?
I mean, you know, what I love to see is the thing that most business owners, most CEOs come to me, not because they're not making enough money. I have some clients who are there, but most of them, they're making plenty of money. But it's just that their business has taken over their lives, right? And it's just, it's a lot of hours, it's a lot of pressure and things like that. And so what I love seeing are the people who come to me and they're at a certain place, and then 6 months or a year into working with me, I see these individuals go from there to working maybe half as much, right? So that they're actually enjoying what they're doing, yet they're making as much money and more. And where it comes from is it's a lot of hard work to get there. It's not like, you know, I'm not one of these people who sells some, you know, package that, oh, guaranteed in 30 days, you're going to, no, it's not like that. It's, you're going to have to put in the hard work. You're going to have to make certain changes. But it's such a beautiful thing. And I have a couple of clients right now who've been with me for a while, and seeing some of them spending now 50% of their time traveling the world, and then noticing that while they're on their vacations, their businesses are making just as much money as when they're actually there. It's just such a beautiful thing to watch, and seeing them finally enjoy what they do. And, you know, I see this with a lot of doctors, actually, where, you know, they went into medicine because they love medicine, and then they started their own practice, and now here they are, you know, not really enjoying any part of their practice. They're not enjoying being with patients because they're so focused on the business. And then when they're doing the business stuff, they're like, well, I don't know what I'm doing because I wasn't trained to do this. Yeah. And you see this with a lot of professionals. But once you get to that point that that you have your life back and still have a business, it's an incredible feeling.
Yeah, that would be great. who are some of the your either podcasts you listen to or authors and books? I know you do a lot of the reading and audibles.
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of an old school guy, so books like How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Classic.
Yeah, you know, what do you call it? Good to Great is one of my favorite business books of all time.
Okay.
There's a cool little book, Who Moved My Cheese? It's one of those quick reads that that's always a good one for me, and I reserve that for people who are doing really well in their business or industry, and I'm like, I always slip that to them. I say, make sure you read this, just in case someone moves your cheese.
Yeah.
I'm into a lot of the classics, but then I'm constantly reading up on new stuff, and these days I read a lot of biographies because I've been learning so much from that as well, just sort of seeing the person as a whole, you know. And I mentioned Tesla and Elon Musk. I just read his biography, and it was amazing. You know, Steve Jobs. Some of these things are such incredible lessons.
Yeah, I think Timothy Ferriss does a good job of interviewing people, successful entrepreneurs and executives and celebrities or whomever. And I think he does a good job of pulling about all their traits and strengths and so forth.
Exactly. That's another really good one. Yeah.
So I'm going to switch gears because this is something unusual. We're both gym rats, right?
Yeah.
Just like Paul. We see Paul, you know, super early in the morning. No, Paul's shaking. No, thumbs down.
Are you talking about me?
That Paul. But your workout routine is much different than most. What is your, you have a time allotment, don't you? Are you 20 minutes?
I do. It's 25 minutes.
25. So you're in, out, you get your whole routine done 25 minutes a day, right?
Yeah, that's, you know, my whole thing is I got to figure out how to balance all this stuff, you know, and you're in amazing shape and, you know, you have a great business and you take care of family and all that. And I find myself, you know, at one point in my life, I was working out 2 hours a day when I was a kid, and I've been an athlete my whole life and I could do that, right? But it wasn't sustainable. I would do it for a while and then stop. And at one point I was married, I had kids, you know, I had my own businesses, plural, and I had all this stuff going on, and I still wanted to have a six pack, right? I was like, well, I still want to be in great shape.
Yeah.
And so what I did is I came up with this concept. I work out for 25 minutes a day, but one, I never skip a day, you know, tired, sleepy, hungover, I don't care, on vacation, I still get in my 25 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's just 25 minutes of really intense. You've seen me, I don't do cardio. It's mostly strength training. You know, I don't go in there and lift heavy weights that I can't lift. You know, I'm not one of those guys, but I go in 25 solid minutes with as few breaks as I possibly can take. And my goal is to break a sweat doing weights in 25 minutes, which isn't always easy to do, but I do these super sets and I go from one thing to the next.
Yeah, I've seen you.
And you know, if I'm busy one day and I don't have time, sometimes I'll do a 15 minute workout, but I still won't skip the gym. And I think that's that's the key that has worked really well for me. So I'm able to keep in good shape while being incredibly busy.
Yeah. Do you use any of that workout theory in your business life from either timing and or I don't know, strategy?
Absolutely. I mean, to me, it's the morning hours are my time, right? Yeah. So if I wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning and I can get my workout done, get into the office and knock out some of the important but not yet urgent tasks, right? That's the key to time management for me. It's all about what do you do today that's important that's not yet urgent, right? So today I had to, you know, I had an appointment with you to come and be on your show.
Yeah.
Well, at this time, I had to be here, right? So this was urgent. I couldn't not be here. But the question, and I ended up being here, right? But the question
on time,
is,
by the way.
On time, yeah, a little bit early, like I was supposed to be. But, you know, the question is, how many things will I get done today that I don't actually have to show up at? And I think the difference between the most successful people I've met in business and those who struggle constantly is, on a daily basis, how many important things can you knock out that are not yet urgent? Or are you just an amazing firefighter? And by the way, that's another thing I find that happens with a lot of CEOs is after a while, they become a firefighter. So they're just battling the next blaze that's broken out. And you know, it's fires that other people are creating and they're putting them out. And as you go to 20, 30, 40 employees, my goodness, right? Some of those fires become bigger and a lot more often. And so for me, those early morning hours are my time to knock out the things that are important but not yet urgent. And by 8 o'clock, when people are rolling into the office, you know, I'm halfway through my day, and I've probably accomplished 90% of what I'm really going to get done for the day.
Yeah. You and I joked about this the other day, and I'm, as we've talked about, I'm a creature of habit, same time, same thing, do, you know, eat the same thing, all that. So there's been times where I'm leaving and I give you a hard time. Hey, you're 6:30. You're coming to the gym so late. You're like, yeah, I just worked for 3 hours.
Well, isn't it nice though to have that kind of a peer group where someone's giving you a hard time for getting into the gym at 6:30 because you're late?
Yeah, I think Paul's just barely thinking about waking up at 6:30. Not even close.
Not even close. Maybe going to bed at 6:30.
As we're getting close to the end of time, any takeaway tips that you would leave with our listeners that are, especially if they're, I don't know, even from a workout standpoint, or they're entrepreneurs or CEOs?
Yeah, you know, I think if I could just sort of sum it all up, I think it's all about balance, but it's about the right kind of balance. People, a lot of times, who talk about having balance in life, I feel are using that as an excuse to be lazy. But you can actually be an amazing father, an amazing husband or wife, an amazing business owner, and still keep in good shape and actually have fun, right? You can have all of that if you're truly committed and dedicated to achieving those things. And I think where it comes from is taking that same approach that you take to the areas of life where you're successful, right? So if a lot of folks listening to this show, you know, maybe in the area of business or personal finances, they're finding that success. The key is, how do you apply that to your relationship and to your kids? And, you know, what if you showed up to spend time with your kids as focused as you do when you show up to a board meeting, right?
Yeah.
Show up to board games as focused as you show up to board meetings.
Yeah.
And it's amazing because you don't have to play with kids for 8 hours, you know, 20 minutes of your undivided attention on your hands and knees with them if they're young enough, like mine are, is enough time for them to feel like you're an amazing dad. But so many of us, you know, we lose sight of that and we're on our phones all the time and disconnected. And you know, we spend 4 hours, but at the end of the 4 hours, we got maybe 4 seconds of quality time.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good one. That's a really good tip. Okay. We're buttoning up towards the end. So I want to say, great having you on the show today. We could do several more shows. I think a lot more to cover. But one of the great things I get to do is ask my guests their kind of what we call our final thought question. And so could you share with us your ultimate lesson learned as your career as a serial entrepreneur?
I'd say it's get obsessed with the numbers behind the most important things in your business or in life. And becoming obsessed with those numbers in business is key performance indicators and understanding them inside and out and really truly becoming obsessed with them to the point that you think about them every day, every week, every month. And you get everything down to those numbers, because when you're there, things start to become a lot easier. And even in health and fitness, you know, I weigh myself every day. Yeah. I take my body fat percentage once a month because it keeps me on track. And every once in a while, the number doesn't look as good as I want.
Yeah.
and I have a reason to make a shift. But getting obsessed with those numbers, I think, is critical.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. How can people reach you?
Well, I post a lot of stuff on my Instagram. That's a really good way. It's Armani OC is my Instagram name. Or going to my website, titaniumsuccess.com. And, you know, I love meeting entrepreneurs, business owners, people who are who love business. So reach out to me. You can find my information on social media or online. And if you have questions, I'm always happy to answer them. And I love getting to know people.
That's awesome. Hey, Armand, what's your guilty pleasure?
My goodness, ice cream.
I love it.
Ice cream, yeah. Chocolate chip ice cream.
There you go. All right, thanks again for coming on. It was a great show. Thanks, everyone who tuned in. I look forward to seeing you in studio or having you in studio next week. Cheers.
Tune in next week for the latest edition of the Zandbergen Report, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Catch up on our recent shows by visiting bartzandbergen.podbean.com. The Zandbergen Report is also available on iTunes, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. Interested in being a featured guest on our show or have a question you'd like to hear us answer? Email podcast@bartzandbergen.com. Bart A. Zandbergen, CFP, and Letitia Burbaum, AIF, are registered investment advisors with Optivest Inc. and registered representatives with Gramercy Securities Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advisory services are offered by Optivest Inc. under SEC registration.